In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Wednesday, August 10th, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We are taking a break from our Pentagon Solutions series today because I have an opportunity to talk to someone that I have wanted to talk to for quite a long time. He is the now former Chief Human Capital Officer of the Department of Homeland Security, Jeff Neal, my guest in studio. It's great to meet you and talk to you and have you here. Thank you for coming in today.
Thanks, Francis. Very happy to be here.
What's it been like since you don't have to get up and put on the suit and go to the office every day?
It's kind of an interesting experience when you get up in the morning and think, wow, what do I have to do today? And the answer is nothing. Feed the cats. Relax. That's about it.
Wow.
I don't really have a lot of things planned right now, and so for the past few days, I've just been relaxing and enjoying the fact that I don't have any commitments.
That is a very enviable schedule, but I know that somebody like you, with the level of involvement that you've had in the federal government and the level of dedication you had to the agency, you probably won't be able to maintain that schedule for very long. You'll probably be itching to do something before too long.
I'm actually going to go to work in late September. I decided I would take off the month of August and September, and then around the end of September, I'm going back to work.
Do you know what you're going to do, and is it something you can tell us yet?
I'm going to be working for a company called ICF International, based in Fairfax.
Mm-hmm. So, in the human capital arena?
Doing consulting in the human capital area.
We'll look forward to hearing and learning more about that as time goes on. As you step back and you've had a chance to think about what you've dealt with at DHS and throughout your federal career, What changed the most in the time that when you started at DHS compared to when you left?
I'd say the biggest thing is actually bringing the components together with respect to some human capital issues. You know, DHS is a collection of loosely affiliated components, sometimes a little more loosely affiliated than we might have preferred. And what we found is everyone was sort of doing their own thing. For example, best example I can think of is our Senior Executive Service Candidate Development Program. We had four of them.
Mm-hmm.
Anything worth doing once is worth doing
sure.
four times.
Might as well just do it four times.
So we had four of them, four sets of programs to run, four sets of programs to pay for. So the headquarters had one that was supposedly for the entire department,
mm-hmm.
and three of the components had their own. And we put together a group of people from all of the components, with a component HR official leading it, and said, okay, build a single program for DHS so we don't have to pay the cost of administering four programs. And over a period of a number of months, 6 or 8 months, that team was able to put together something that was a DHS-wide program and retire three programs.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to get them to come together and do something that made a lot of sense for the department and reduce costs for the department. And that was really important to be able to get them to do that, and also important to get them working together.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't always something they've been doing.
That's an interesting management challenge because I imagine, too, if you had four different programs, you had four different levels of effectiveness mm-hmm. that were preparing the SESers at different levels of ability. How did you go about deciding which of the one, what were the good parts of each and what were the parts you wanted to discard? And because it's not normally a matter of just saying, okay, here's four and that one's the best, so we'll just keep doing that.
But what we did is we used a model I'd used successfully in my previous position at the Defense Logistics Agency, which is to put together a team of people who are going to be affected by the program we're trying to develop. And I gave them a couple of very broad parameters for the program, and the most important one is anyone who went through that program had to come out of it having had experience in another component, or if they're in a component or in the headquarters in one of the components. So they had to get experience somewhere else, and it had to be for several months. It couldn't just be dip them in it for a week and say they've learned something.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, beyond that, come up with something that makes sense for this department as a whole. And I let that team of people work out the details. And over a period of several months, they came back with something that was a really solid program. It included that cross-training assignment that we wanted. It included classroom training. It was on-the-job training. It was a little bit of everything. And I think they put together a very good program. The department brought its first, I believe, 46 SES candidates into the program a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, and we retired the other programs.
Yeah. So it's not just a matter of identifying, we like this one, we think this one will work best, and we'll just multiply that however many times we need to reach the scale that we need to.
I think when you're dealing with a lot of components, each of them has to see something of theirs in the program. If you went to TSA and said, we're going to give you a new program, and by the way, it's CBP's program,
mm-hmm.
TSA, the Transportation Security Agency, CBP, Customs and Border Protection, TSA wouldn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's just something that bothers people when you say, hey, we're going to throw out everything you're doing and replace it with everything someone else is doing.
Yeah.
And so so what we did is we told them, you know, you've got to negotiate the terms of this thing and come up with the things that you can live with and that will meet your needs. And so each of the components was able to see things in there that had been strengths of their program, and they were able to carry those forward in the departmental program. That's the only way to make something like that work.
Do you see a rush sometimes in government, though, in the interest of trying to save time or trying to save money, to do it that way, to try to kind of force a square peg into a round hole to make people – to just so we can get this done and move on to the next thing, because we've got 50 million things we have to do?
Yes, I see that a lot. What you'll find is folks are looking for a quick and easy answer to a very complex problem.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime someone tells you there's a simple solution to a complex problem, you should start questioning whether or not it's really a solution or not.
Yeah.
If it's that simple, somebody would have done it years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of these things are not that simple.
Yeah.
It's easy to go out and find something that you think will answer the mail and then say, here's the solution, walk away and never check it again.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other things that I've always done in programs is when I'm building programs or have teams of people building programs, build in some evaluation criteria so you'll know whether or not this program actually did what it was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't, then either fix the program or kill it. But don't keep on doing things that you can't prove are working.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very easy to try to latch on to something that somebody tried 4 years ago and say, well, here's an old solution. We can just dust this one off.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found is it doesn't usually work.
That's the reason why it's sitting somewhere gathering that dust.
Yeah, it doesn't usually work.
In the example that you used, I guess it's possible that you could look at the you used the example that we'll take this that worked at TSA and use it at CBP. If it were possible to get those CBP people to buy into it, it might work. But since you're dealing with human beings that have thoughts and feelings and emotions, that's where this goes bad. And that's where people say, you know what, I think we have to buy into this and have some investment in it. Is that what you're getting at?
Very much. When you look at those thoughts and feelings, chief among those feelings is ego.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't want to be told that their program wasn't as good as someone else's. And that tends to get their egos bruised a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so egos can get in the way of doing things effectively sometimes. And just a conviction that what you were doing was right. You know, we're doing what we're doing because it's the best solution. Now someone from the headquarters is coming along and saying, use somebody else's solution.
Mm-hmm.
And their solution's not as good. And the reality is a lot of times the solution that CBP has is the best solution for CBP.
Mm-hmm.
And the solution that TSA has is the best solution for TSA. But we're not in an environment where we can afford the very best solution for everyone that's custom tailored to them.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to cut cost in government, you have to start accepting the fact that maybe you won't have the ideal solution. Maybe the TSA solution meets 90% of CBP's needs,
mm-hmm.
and CBP has to adapt to that and go with it. You know, if you're looking at getting 90% of what you want for a dollar, or 100% of what you want for $5, in today's budget environment, you'll take the dollar cost and, and go with that.
Yeah. To steal a term from the acquisition shop, lowest price technically acceptable, I guess, is what we have to think about in terms of some of these things
in
now.
In many respects, yes.
Yeah. My guest is Jeff Neal. He's the former Chief Human Capital Officer at the Department of Homeland Security. You dealt with culture and those all those various component cultures a lot, and that's something that I'm always interested in. We'll talk about that a little bit, if you don't mind, when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose.
Mission Goals Through Technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Navy and Marine Corps want to explore ways to lower their IT costs by partnering with the private sector on data center consolidation. They're asking industry for ideas on how the joint data centers could shrink the 80 centers the Department of the Navy operates now all around the world into a more rational footprint while still maintaining high availability and performance. The department has been told to cut its costs for business information technology systems by 25%.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology, and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
What is the mission of the National Guard Joint Continuous Process Improvement Initiative? How is the Guard improving its operations, becoming more efficient, and promoting organizational excellence? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with Colonel Donald Dellinger, Deployment Director of the Continuous Process Improvement Initiative at the National Guard Bureau, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Facing a new day, delivering services efficiently, improving citizens' lives. Booz Allen Hamilton supports the most important challenges of government, from defense and economic security to health and cyber solutions. Booz Allen's strategy and technology consultants partner with clients to deliver results that endure. Whether managing today's issues or looking beyond the horizon, clients can count on Booz Allen to help them be ready for what's next. BoozAllen.com/ready for what's next.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Attention federal agencies. Want to upgrade your old inefficient printer? Buy select HP printers and save up to $700 instantly when you trade in your old laser or inkjet printer. Best of all, the shipping and recycling of your old printer are free as part of the HP Trade-In and Save program. Take advantage of this offer from GovConnection, the federal marketplace's trusted source for technology products, contract expertise, and exceptional service. For complete details, call GovConnection today at 1-800-800-0019.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's a look at Thursday morning's Federal Drive. The debt downgrade happened, so what's the implication for federal agencies? Analysis from the Bipartisan Policy Center. And we continue our series, Talk Back to Washington. We hear from the Chief Medical Officer at NASA about his role as a manager working outside of D.C. So how crucial is that face-to-face meeting? That and more Thursday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Former DHS Chief Human Capital Officer Jeffrey Neal is my guest today, and we're talking about a number of different issues that you've dealt with in your career in government. And one of the things that people talk about all the time, especially a lot on the Hill, is the various component agencies inside DHS and how they are, I guess, still in the process of trying to bind themselves together. And there have been a number of fits and starts, and some agencies are probably more amenable to that binding process than others. How do you navigate all of that when it comes to trying to establish some, maybe standards is the wrong word, but some uniformity as far as how you bring people in? Or is that not even the way that it pays to think about trying to navigate that kind of cultural situation?
Well, I think you have to look at why you want uniformity. If you want uniformity because you think uniformity is a nice thing to have, it's a hard sell. You have to have a reason behind it. If you want uniformity in a system, for example, and you can show that that uniformity will save you money, and I think DHS was able to show that in some cases, then you can get some interest in it. If you want uniformity because it makes it easier for the department to be able to function as one department, then you might be able to get some traction behind that.
Mm-hmm.
If it's just uniformity for the sake of uniformity, it doesn't sell.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I learned in a couple of years at DHS was to choose those particular battles, and I use the term battle deliberately, choose those battles carefully.
Uh-huh.
And do it when it makes sense for the department. And when I say to the department, I don't mean the headquarters of the department. I mean all 190,000 civilians, 42,000 military,
mm-hmm,
in the department. And when you can find things that are in the interest of that large enterprise functioning well, you can sell those things. And we were able to sell a number of things like that. And in doing that, the thing I found that made it work was to only set broad parameters within which people had to work.
Mm-hmm.
And then tell them the kind of outcome you're looking for, and then let them do the work themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Let the components build the program. DHS had a reputation early on of a very top-down type of headquarters, where the headquarters would tell the components, you are going to do X. And the components would tell the headquarters, no, we're not. Or they would just ignore it. They actually wouldn't openly defy them. Frequently, they would just ignore them.
Mm-hmm.
And that approach simply doesn't work. So bringing them in and letting them be a part of the solution and then letting them develop a solution that works for them is actually something that's effective. And I found that DHS components were very willing to work with us on those kinds of terms. And we were able to bring them together on some really good things. The person I mentioned earlier who led the effort on our SCS candidate development program said it was one of the high points of her career. So things like that can really work if, mm-hmm, if you want people to get involved and you want their opinion, and then you actually go with what they're recommending. You can get a lot done.
It sounds pretty basic, and I guess the word that jumps to my mind is collaboration. You're just encouraging collaboration and ideas from all parts of the organization instead of just deciding that you're the chief human capital officer, so you're the expert, the resident expert on human capital.
Absolutely. If a chief human capital officer in a department like DHS comes in with the attitude that I'm the king of the universe, and or the queen of the universe, as the case might be, and everyone's going to do what I say, that person will fail.
Mm-hmm.
It's not possible to do that in most organizations, and DHS is no different from any other organization with respect to that. If someone comes in and tells you, here is how you're going to do your job, here's how you're going to think, here's how you're going to behave,
mm-hmm,
you start pushing back. And I found the DHS components were very willing to work with us when we were trying to do it in a collaborative way. When we were trying to do it in a very top-down way, they were less likely to want to play.
You mentioned the fact there that in that one area, DHS is not different than other organizations. Do we maybe oversell the idea that DHS is so dramatically different than other agencies because it has all of these various components? I mean, if we peel back the layers on other agencies, there are, you know, a number of different bureaus or whatever within all of these other agencies that have ways of doing things. Is DHS that dramatically different than other structures, do you think?
No, it's not. It's funny. I've worked in a couple of places that had those kinds of structures. I've worked for the Department of Commerce, which has a number of bureaus. Worked for the Department of Defense, which has the defense agencies and the services, and for the Department of Homeland Security. DHS is newer, and it hasn't quite adapted to being a department yet. But as far as the headquarters component dynamic, it's really no different in DHS than it is in the Department of Commerce or the Department of Defense. Those organizations, those bureaus, components, agencies, services, all have their own leadership structures. They have, in many cases, their own HR, their own IT, their own financial management structures, their own procurement structures. And all of those folks are very focused on getting the mission of that component or agency or bureau done.
Mm-hmm.
And frequently they'll view the headquarters as an irritant. I can tell you when I was in the Department of Defense, I didn't bow to the Pentagon all the time. And the services will tell you the same thing that the other defense agencies would tell you that. They were sometimes very, very helpful, and sometimes they were a pain in the neck.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried as the Chief Human Capital Officer for DHS to recognize when, if I were on the other side, I would think I was being a pain in the neck.
Mm-hmm.
And if I saw that coming, unless it was for a really good reason, I tried to avoid that. There were a couple of times when I thought I was probably being a pain in the neck, and it was the right thing to do.
And there are probably you probably gain a lot of currency just by being able to say, listen, I know I'm being a pain in the neck, but there's mm-hmm. a good reason for this, and here it is.
Yes.
And that probably immediately removes a lot of the angst that people have about the fact that you are being a pain in the neck.
Removing the angst might be going a little bit too far.
Lessening it, maybe. Yeah.
Maybe it lessens it a little bit. It doesn't quite remove it.
Yeah.
But it does help when the components understand that the folks in the headquarters are not doing things just because they can.
Mm-hmm.
That helps quite a bit.
Jeff Neils, the former Chief Human Capital Officer at the Department of Homeland Security, among other posts, my guest for the hour on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Our conversation continues in a moment.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit matrixdirect.com.
Sometimes I worry about what would happen to my family if I lost my job. But I never really thought about what would happen to them if they lost me and I didn't have life insurance. My cousin's husband died, and now she might have to sell her house just to make ends meet. I don't ever want to put my wife through that. So I called Matrix Direct.
Hi, I'm Brent Langdon for Matrix Direct. We partnered with American General Life to find you their lowest rates on term life insurance products. If you're 40 years old and married, we could find you a $250,000 policy for less than $16 a month. Call now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-588-5514.
I feel so much better now that I called.
It only takes 5 minutes to see how you could save up to 70%. Call now. 1-800-588-5514. 1-800-588-5514.
Cloud computing. Your data and apps must move easily and securely to reach many clouds, not just one. That's why the network that connects, protects, and lets your data move fearlessly through the clouds means more than ever. See how. Cloud Advantage for Government. The Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com. Brought to you by Cisco and Intel.
Welcome to Beltway Q&A. The guest is Dan Doherty, Vice President of EMC Federal. Today's question, how can IT managers support the mission while facing budget cuts and the increase in cost of managing information?
Federal customers have to do more with less. EMC Unified Storage saves you money in two ways. It's simple to use and reduces your storage cost through greater efficiency.
So EMC Storage saves money because it is simple, efficient, and affordable?
That's right. Federal customers can do more with less.
Now available on GSA schedule through government acquisitions.
The challenge is to accomplish your mission even when you're under cyber attack. The cyber analysts at Kinetic North America, along with their proactive cyber solutions, can protect your critical information. With mission assurance solutions, insider threat identification, and advanced persistent threat detection, they have the technical and cyber capabilities to keep you ahead of threats. Learn more at kinetic-na.com/get-secure. That's kinetic-na.com/get-secure. When it's critical, it's Kinetic North America.
IBM's supercomputer Watson may make us feel inadequate on quiz shows, but our brains actually outperform even the most powerful computers in many respects. The human brain packs incredibly nimble learning and processing power into a relatively small space using tiny amounts of energy. Dewiga Kazum of Stanford University says today's digital computers will never really compare for a wide variety of tasks.
If we do brain simulation in real time using powerful supercomputers, it will basically require a dedicated nuclear power plant.
Kazum is part of a team engineering devices that mimic the versatile signaling strengths, learning ability, and size of the connections between nerve cells in the brain.
We try to extend the capabilities of information technology beyond digital logic.
The devices may also give us a better understanding of our brains. For more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Join Alan Greenspan, the former chair of the Federal Reserve System, as he discusses the intersection of economics and IT at the Innovation Nation Forum, August 23rd at the D.C. Convention Center. Also there, the Merit Awards will recognize the best idea to use IT to improve government with a $50,000 cash prize. Shake IT up. Register at meritalk.com. That's MERITALK.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Jeff Neal. He's the former Chief Human Capital Officer at the Department of Homeland Security. One thing that I've noted in the conversation that we've had so far, both on the air and off the air, is I think the two most spoken words on your part have been senior executives, and your commitment to the senior executive service through the work that you've done is self-evident. What is it about the SES that you think is so valuable and deserving of the investment of time and resources that you've done, not just at DHS, but the other agencies you've worked at?
Well, I'll admit I was a career senior executive service member for 11 years before I was a political appointee. And so I probably have a slight bias.
You're a little biased then. That's okay.
With respect to the senior executive service. But when you look at an organization and look at those senior executives, they are the ones who can affect the largest numbers of employees. A really good senior executive can make life better at work for 50 or 100 or 200 or 300 people. A really bad senior executive can make life miserable for an equal number of people. And so having good, very talented, committed senior executives in place, I think, is really important. They're the ones who can argue for the employees. They're the ones who can make the case for the budget. They're the ones who can be that layer between the politicals and the career staff to help get things done in an organization. So I'm convinced that an organization that has really talented senior executives has a much better chance of excelling, much better chance of being a great place to work, mm-hmm. much better chance of recruiting the right talent if they've got the right leadership. Leadership really drives so many different things. And leadership drives good employees away if it's bad leadership.
Mm-hmm. There are some folks that have talked about the structure at the high end of the GS schedule and making that move to SES and talking about a potential disincentive there financially and otherwise. Did you find that to be the case in your career, that there were folks who said, you know what, it's just not worth it for me to try to transition? Or is there a non-compensation factor there that attracts people to senior executive service?
Answer the first question, yes, I did find that sometimes. I started myself as a GS-5 mm-hmm. in Memphis, Tennessee in 1978. So I didn't start very high above the bottom of the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found is that you would find some folks who were very driven to be senior executives. They wanted that flag in their office. They wanted to be the person who could make the decisions in an organization, frequently for very good reasons, that they saw that there were better ways to get things done, and they wanted to be able to make those things happen. You'd find some people who were talented, and they would look at the challenges that came along with being a senior executive and say, no, I don't really think I want to do that. Senior executives don't get comp time. Senior executives don't get credit hours. Senior executives in most organizations, although some are more flexible, in most organizations don't have compressed work schedules. They have expanded work schedules. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people who are talented would look at it and say, well, you know, there's a lot that comes with it as far as responsibility and a lot of headaches, but there isn't that much money. You know, the entry pay level for an SES is roughly equivalent to GS-14, $120,000 a year, and they go up to $179,000 a year. So it's people don't go into the senior executive service for the money.
Mm-hmm.
Believe me, it's not that much more money than a GS-15 can make or an equivalent in non-GS organizations.
It seems to me, though, you can make a case for the fact that, well, if that's what matters to a particular person and they're not willing to take on that added responsibility, then maybe that's a good fit that they're not going to make that move into the senior executive service.
Well, I agree. I've worked with very talented folks who I thought would be great senior executives who are GS-15s, and they told me why they wanted to stay GS-15s, and they did. They stayed GS-15s. One woman I worked with for a number of years who was actually my deputy at one time said, you know, I don't want to put the time into being an SES because I'm taking care of my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to take the time away from my mom.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard to argue with that.
That's right.
I mean, what do you say? Well, no, forget about the old
your
lady.
Mom's not nearly as important as your career.
Yeah, you can't make an argument against something like that.
Yeah.
So when someone says, someone's doing great work as a GS-15, says, I want to stay a GS-15, then I say, great, come work for me.
Mm-hmm. That's
I
right.
want to hire folks like that.
Yeah. Do agencies use the senior executive service to their greatest potential, do you think?
Probably not. I think there are times in an organization where a decision needs to be made, and the organization will send some political appointees into a room, and they'll make a decision, and in some cases not include the career folks because they're career folks. I remember years ago in my first SES position at the Department of Commerce, I was in a meeting with the deputy secretary and a number of political appointees, and I was the only career person in the room. And one of the senior political folks in the room looked at the deputy secretary and said, do we want to have this discussion in front of the career staff? And Robert Mallett was the deputy secretary at the time, and Robert looked at her and said, do you mean him? And she said, well, yes. And he said, I trust him more than I trust you. And so that ended that.
Yeah, that would be pretty definitive, yes.
But frequently, career people who have the right knowledge and the right ability don't participate in the decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that government as a whole, it's not a DHS-specific thing, government as a whole could benefit from making better use not only of the career senior executives but the career staff in general. There are a lot of really talented people in government. And I don't think they always get listened to.
Is there somehow that something along those lines could maybe be integrated into the process of education when somebody becomes a political appointee? Or what's the solution there? Because I will tell you, every political appointee to a person that I've ever spoken to who comes out of government says, doesn't matter party, doesn't matter what administration they served in, the federal workforce is not anything like what people think it is. It's full of really talented people. They really work hard. They do terrific work, very high quality and very high quantity, on and on and on and on. And so figuring out a way for them to understand that when they're starting instead of when they're finishing seems like it would go a long way toward addressing what you're talking about.
Actually, the Obama administration is doing that and has been now for a couple of years. Presidential personnel does a one-day training session for political appointees, and an hour of that session every time is the relationship between career employees and politicals.
Mm-hmm.
I know because I led those discussions for the last couple of years, and And I guess I trained 1,200 or so political appointees. And it's surprising because you would find some people in the audience who had already recognized that career folks were going to either help them succeed or cause them to fail.
Mm-hmm.
But the career folks were going to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were folks who a small number, who just weren't quite gelling with the career folks yet. And we spent some time trying to explain to them why that was really important, and that nothing gets done in government without the career federal employees. And the good thing is that the career federal employees, as you said, are a really talented bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest surprises I had at DHS, you know, I've heard all the bad things that people have said about DHS for the last 8 years. And when I went there, people said, why on earth would you take a job as head of HR for that place?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, I would like to be a part of President Obama's administration. I was offered this position at DHS. I decided I would take it. And I got there, and lo and behold, I found a lot of very talented people. I found the HR operation, even though it didn't have a great reputation, had a lot of really talented people in it. They didn't deserve the bad reputation they had. These were good folks doing good work.
Mm-hmm.
They were understaffed and they were overworked. And that probably contributed to some of the issues. But they were really talented people. And everywhere across DHS I went, I found really talented people. Go to an airport and go through a TSA checkpoint. And you can view that as wow, you know, it's a pain in the neck to go through this checkpoint. Or you can look back at the fact that in 10 years, we haven't had any of our airplanes come out of the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And TSA's been doing its job.
Yeah.
In fact, if you want to feel better for a day, next time you go through a checkpoint and you deal with a transportation security officer, say thank you, and watch the reaction on their faces. Those men and women get so little respect for what they do that when you say thank you, I appreciate what you do, they feel better all day, and you will too.
I'm going to pat myself on the back then, because I went with my family to Disney World not too long ago, and I did exactly that. And I said to my son, I'm not trying to make myself sound like a wise guy or anything, but I said to my son, these people work for us the same way that people in the military work for us. And they're trying to keep us safe, because he was going, you know, he's 11. He's going, why are we doing all this stuff? And I have to open up my DS and blah, 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 blah. And I said, here's why. Explain the whole thing to him. And as we walked through, we just said, hey, thank you very much. That wasn't hard at all. And you would have thought I just gave the person $10,000.
Oh, it's amazing how much better those men and women feel when someone actually just says thank you for the work that they do.
Mm-hmm. I tweeted out, and I don't have a million followers on Twitter or anything, but I tweeted out once we were cleared through BWI that cleared security had no problems, and the response to that was people were, really? And I went back and looked, and these were people that hadn't flown for a while and were just going on what they heard through the media or through anecdotal stories. And going neither way did we have any trouble. It's interesting to think about it from that perspective. Your job is different now. Your job transformed as you left it at DHS from a political appointee position to a career position. And
correct,
we'll talk about that transformation if we can when we come back from the break. My guest is Jeffrey Neal, the former Chief Human Capital Officer at the Homeland Security Department on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
To defend our nation effectively, missile defense must be affordable, available, and reliable. Lockheed Martin's team for ground-based mid-course defense is the right team to meet this challenge. Our proven performance-based logistics capabilities have been refined on more than 50 programs and honored by 9 Secretary of Defense awards. Increasing confidence and readiness while reducing sustainment cost is all a question of how, and it is the how that Lockheed Martin delivers. For ground-based mid-course defense, the Lockheed Martin team has the know-how for success, the people, the processes, the performance. Together, we have built strong government-industry partnerships, led the industry in performance-based logistics, and built systems that have achieved more than 50 intercepts in test and combat, assuring affordability, availability, and reliability for ground-based mid-course defense is all a question of how, and it is the how that Lockheed Martin delivers.
Quest Government Services is becoming CenturyLink. CenturyLink is positioned to support your mission objectives and provide you with an enhanced product and service portfolio. With our global reach, expanded nationwide network, and financial strength, we are linking IT leaders to a better future. Your link to the future begins here. One company, stronger connected. See the benefits of partnering with us at quest.com/federal. That's quest.com/federal.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris.
FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt, what's the payroll situation for the people returning?
That's a little murky, and there's already been an indication that some members of Congress, I think understanding now the ramifications of what happened and what they did, are considering taking up a measure that would provide some retroactive benefit for them, you know, some back wages. But that would have to be, something going forward. That's not in hand yet.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federal. Drive.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Jeff Neal, the former Chief Human Capital Officer at DHS, and you were a political appointee in that job, and I mentioned off the air a little bit ago that when I announced, talked about the transition from that job going from being a political appointee job to becoming a career position, I got more feedback on that change than just about anything I announced that particular week, because people were surprised about that transition. Talk about the genesis of that and how that came to happen, and then how you came to identify the right person for that slot.
Yeah, the position has been political since the department was created. And originally in the Homeland Security Act, it was actually required to be a political appointee. About 2.5 years ago, the law was changed so the position could be career or political, and it was the secretary's discretion. And so she could do what she wanted with the position. When I was hired, they decided they wanted a political. And I think that was because the administration was relatively new, was considered to be a key position in the department, and they wanted somebody they knew would be there to carry out the policy direction of the secretary and the president. And so they brought me in as a political appointee, even though I had been a career senior executive. And over the 8-year history of DHS, there have been 5 appointees in that position. That's only the people who were actually appointed. Then there were 3 or 4 acting chief human capital officers. So in 8 years, DHS has had 8 or 9 CHICOs. That's not good. I mean, there's no way you can argue that it's good for a department to average 1 a year mm-hmm. on a key management position. So when I told my boss I was going to leave, I said, you know, we should start looking at who the replacement would be. And the CHICO at DHS reports to the Undersecretary for Management, which is a guy named Rafael Boris. Mm-hmm. Very, very good guy to work for. Great guy to work for, as a matter of fact. Rafael and I started talking about what would make sense for the position. And you know, I said, you know, I think it should be career. And I'll help find a good career person for you for the position. He agreed immediately Rafael's been an appointee in this administration and in the Clinton administration. So he was used to working with federal employees. He knew mm-hmm. what career employees were like. Mm-hmm. And he said, sure, I think that'd be a great idea. Can we find somebody really good who wants the job? So you have to find somebody who's really smart, got great experience, and is just crazy enough to want to be the CHICO at DHS. And so we started looking to see who would be out there, who would have the right kind of talent to come in and do the job. And we found a very good senior executive at the Federal Aviation Administration, and unfortunately stole her from them right before the furloughs, which mm-hmm. was terrible. But Yeah,
the way things work
such
sometimes.
Such is life. Sometimes
right.
things, timing is not good sometimes. And so Catherine Emerson is her name, and Catherine is the Chico at DHS now. We actually brought her in 2 weeks before I left. We had actual turnover time. We were able to go through all the turnover briefings and have the benefit of her getting those briefings with the former Chico sitting there. So a lot of the stuff people might tell you, you know, when you've come in as a new leader, they had to be very honest about it because the guy who's been sitting there for 2 years was there listening and, right. and participating in the discussions. And I think it's going to help DHS a lot to have a career person in that position.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I was probably the right person to be there to help show that because at one point when we were having the discussion about whether the position should be career or political, one of the senior folks in the department said, well, you know, I want somebody who's got what you've got. And I said, well, what you like about me isn't because I'm political. What you like about me is the experience I had as a career federal employee.
Mm-hmm.
I brought 31 years of experience to this position. And so when you ask a question, I have an answer.
Mm-hmm.
Where if I had walked in off the street, I wouldn't be able to do that.
You'd have to go ask the career person that reports to you what the answer is.
Right.
Yeah,
it's funny when I first got to DHS, I was asked a simple question. My staff came in, my policy folks came in, and they wanted to ask for a simple decision. They had a PowerPoint deck of about 25 or 30 charts, and they gave me this deck of charts. And they started going through them one at a time. And this was an hour long meeting that was scheduled, and so I started flipping through the things. And I flipped through every page and got to the end. I said, "Okay, is this the question?" They said, "Yes." I said, "Okay, yes, you can do that." And so I
blew their minds.
I sent everybody away except the boss, and I said, "Okay, what's all this stuff for? You know, why did you give me 25 briefing charts for a simple question?" He said, "You don't understand. This is the world we have lived in since this department was created. We would have to come in and explain in great detail everything. So we had to do HR 101 for every question." And it wasn't that the people that had been hired to be Chico weren't very talented people. There were folks who came primarily from the private sector with very, very good experience, but they didn't know that stack of rules and regulations the federal government had, and it got in the way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think making that position career is a very good move, and I'm really pleased that Rafael Borras was willing to do it, and most importantly that Secretary Napolitano was willing to do it because it was, in the end, was her call. And when she was asked, "What do you think? Should we do this or not?" she said, "Absolutely do it."
We have to squeeze in one more break, so just a yes or no answer. Should there be a lot more of that, do you think, in the federal government, a lot more positions that should convert like that?
Yes.
Okay, excellent that you actually listened to my request for a yes or no answer. That's Jeff Neal, the former Chief Human Capital Officer at the Homeland Security Department on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Back to wrap up in just a moment.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM every Friday morning at 11. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week's Encore show, host Deborah Roth will take a look inside the intelligence community and IC collaboration with Booz Allen Hamilton Executive VP Richard Wilhelm and the FBI Intelligence Analysts Association.
Facing a new day, delivering services efficiently, improving citizens' lives, Booz Allen Hamilton supports the most important challenges of government, from defense and economic security to health and cyber solutions. Booz Allen's strategy and technology consultants partner with clients to deliver results that endure. Whether managing today's issues or looking beyond the horizon, clients can count on Booz Allen to help them be ready for what's next. BoozAllen.com/ready for what's next.
Here's Paul Benda, Director of Homeland Security, Advanced Research Project Agency, DHS, S&T, on the Federal Executive Forum on Emerging Technologies, sponsored by Riverbed Technology.
Well, I think the future really is going to be that technology is going to have to converge with efficiencies. That, you know, we're going to have to build these new capabilities on the backs of creating better cost models for us.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
How would you like to increase the productivity of your mobile and teleworkers? Now you can through Riverbed. Their WAN optimization solutions empower mobile workers with high-performance access to email, files, and applications and keep them collaborating in real time. Challenges and delays in working remotely suddenly disappear, and you're complying with telework and COOP mandates. Free your mobile workers to work anywhere with Riverbed. Learn more at riverbed.com. That's R-I-V-E-R-B-E-D.com. Riverbed. Think fast.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife. My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Just a few minutes left. In fact, just a couple left with Jeff Neal, the former Chief Human Capital Officer at the Homeland Security Department. This has been a lot of fun and very, very instructive, so I appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Would love for you to come back, as we talked about during the break, and just kind of help me understand and help my audience understand the challenges that HR people inside government face as situations present themselves.
Happy to do that.
Overall, do you think the agency's headed in the right direction after the 8 years or so that it's been kind of feeling its way?
Yeah, definitely. DHS is a far more capable organization than people give it credit for sometimes. A lot of talented people, very talented leadership. Secretary Napolitano is first rate. I certainly hope she stays on for a second term. I think DHS is heading in the right direction. It's over 230,000 people. And you can't put an organization of 230,000 people and $50 billion together and just snap your fingers and say, poof, you have an agency. It doesn't work that way. So I think DHS is definitely headed in the right direction. I think in the past couple of years, we got a lot of traction on getting the department together and functioning as one DHS. And so I'm very content with the progress DHS is making. And if I knew now, if I knew then what I know now, I would have definitely taken the DHS job and enjoyed the experience.